Welcome to Mental Health Insights. My name is Craig, and today I'm here with Matt, and we're going to talk about what it looks like whenever we kind of get on the other side of addiction. We kind of get into the recovery and the hope for a better life. So, Matt, thank you for joining us. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about yourself?
Hi, Craig. Thanks for having me. My name is Matt Bowersax. I am the founder and director of operations at Learn to Live Recovery. I just got 10 years of sobriety recently. I am a master's level social worker and just overall passionate about recovery in general.
All right. 10 years is a good amount of time. And I think that, so for those of you that actually can't see Matt or anything like that, Matt's a young looking guy, right? And we'll kind of talk a little bit about that today. Some of the things that have happened that have kind of led you here, because this is a project that you've had your eyes on. This is a dream that you've had your eyes on for a long time. And we were even talking a little bit about this before we started recording that, you know, a lot of attention gets paid to like the problem of addiction and the issues that it has and kind of like what that looks like. And we've even had several episodes over that. And there isn't always a lot of conversation of what it looks like on the other side. And I want us to have that conversation today. But before we do that, I actually do want to talk for a very, very short amount of time about that problem and like what it looks like whenever someone is kind of going through the process of learning about how they need to live in recovery. And I'm wondering if you can kind of walk us a little bit through that, Matt, or some of the major points that people hit where things start to kind of click.
Yeah. So, you know, this is kind of the point of recovery that I've, you know, spent a lot of my life thinking about what it should look like or things like that. And I think addiction treatment centers do a good job of getting someone sober, or programs or therapists, outpatients, they get someone sober. But recovery comes from several different ways. I think that you have to build on more than just what you get from groups and things like that. I think that once you start to really see long-lasting recovery is, one, you start to have fun. You know, when you're in the middle of your addiction, nothing seems fun because your brain connects fun with whatever you were using. And so that's one. If you can see yourself starting to have fun again, that's a good sign. I think the other thing is passion. Passion is a big thing in my life. I struggled for a while. Like I was even 4 or 5 years sober trying to figure out what made me passionate enough to, you know, continue my life in recovery. And, you know, that was this.
Right.
And then, you know, to go a little further, purpose. Purpose is something where it kind of means something different to different people. But I think that purpose is to me that, you know, someone gets sober, their purpose was to use. That was their only purpose.
Right.
And when they get sober and they start to work on themselves, purpose is not always what you do, but how you do it.
Right.
For example, no, I was a very like negative person before I got sober. And I, you know, now I am pretty much the complete opposite. Anyone who knows me.
No one would say that that just met you today.
Exactly. I just, I choose now to see the bright parts of life. And it was that right there, like the power of positivity. A lot of people have written books about it. A lot of people discuss it and how it relates to addiction and recovery. And it was huge for me. Right. Once I started to see that, things started to align for me.
Well, and I want to kind of cut in for a second because you're talking about a lot of things. And one of the things that's happening for me as I'm listening to this is that, addiction or not, this is what just normal people struggle with too. And yeah. I think that's, in my time working in addiction, and I know in your time working in addiction, because we've kind of had this conversation before, that it is so incredible, like how much overlap there is, because it's like the humanness of all of us just trying to figure out how to do this thing that we call life and trying to discover that purpose. And I love how you say that, where during the really intense parts of addiction, our purpose becomes to seek whatever that substance is that's really helping us get through or not get through things. And having that shift in mindset. And I think that's one of the hard things that so many people may not get about addiction, is that it affects so many different things. And then all of a sudden, whenever you go into recovery, and like you said, there's a lot of treatment centers that do good at getting you sober, right? They'll lock you up, make sure that you don't have access to it. And you will get sober, whether or not you like it or not. And you know, some of them may do a better job of it than others. And it's a process of getting you sober. And one of the things that it sounds like you're telling us is that there has to be more than that. And there's skills that come along with this of a rediscovery of where you're, you know, the purpose of your life, what you need to do, and the outlook that you need to have.
Yeah.
So I wonder for you, you're talking about like people kind of go through this journey. And they go through this journey about like rediscovering themselves and noticing this and some of the things that they do. Give me a little bit of idea, like how does somebody go through this process of living differently and seeking kind of, or noticing a different purpose? Cause you said for you, like 5 years sober.
Yeah.
It's a long time.
It is. I mean, I do think that this journey that we talk about is specific to the person. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that, you know, that is where the learn to live tag came from, because, you know, so much of your life is taken over from addiction that you really start from scratch. You know, and like we talked about, you know, the treatment center can get you sober, but after that, it involves some sort of action.
Mm-hmm.
Whether you do sober living or outpatient or some combination of the two, or a 12-step program, it involves changing something about what you were doing before to give you success in your recovery after.
So can you talk to me, like if I'm someone that has been through treatment, why is it important that after I get out of, you know, a residential setting or anything like that, why would it be important for me to follow that up with either outpatient care or, you know, even like a program like yours or anything like that? Mm-hmm. What would be the benefit for me in doing that?
Well, one, you know, we know as like clinicians that, you know, addiction can be affecting your brain even mm-hmm. long after you're sober. You know, all the research says up to a year. Sometimes longer. It kind of depends.
Some cocaine study says 20 years.
Yeah, long time.
Yeah.
Long time. And, you know, as we talk about, and I like to make this comparison because I think people really can understand it. So in January, we're all warriors for self-improvement. Mm-hmm. We want to go back to the gym. We want to read more. We want to do all these things. And, you know, there's some of us that do it for 2 weeks and that's it. 3 weeks. That's just not long enough to build a habit. And it's same so for addiction, even more so. 3 weeks cannot cure you of that. You need structure and you need a safe place for self, you know, self exploration.
Right.
You know, you don't know yourself once you're in addiction. You're an entirely different person. People will tell you this. you know, because you act differently, your motives are different, what you care about is different. Mm-hmm. And once you begin to start the recovery process, you know, you start to notice, hey, I think I really like to hike. I think I really like, you know, I think even though I didn't like school before, I think I'd really like to go back to school. Right. Or I really am interested in construction. I think I'd like to do an internship. So not only should you work on your recovery goals, but you should also follow your passion.
Right. So I think one of the things that I'm hearing is that you go from a residential setting that might be extremely structured, or even sometimes intensive yeah. outpatients that are extremely structured. And as you progress in your recovery, like all of a sudden that structure just gets dropped out on you. Like after three yeah. weeks or a month, it's like, all right, hey, you know, you're good to go. You got sober, you know, have a good life. And then you may go home and you are a different person because you're not using currently. You're not using in that moment. And you have to discover how to live as that person or else you will revert back. Mm-hmm. And I think that for us, while we're growing up, we're a person, and I think this is probably maybe even hard for someone that doesn't have an addiction to understand, is that people go through the process of their life discovering who they are, usually whenever they're younger. And as they get older, right, they go through more sophisticated exploration of who they are and discovery. And whenever someone gets thrown into an addiction, they don't actually have that same type of opportunity, right? They become someone different and they can lose all that time while they're in addiction. And then starting that discovery process and trying to figure it out on their own, especially like when you go from extreme structure to, okay, now go and live the rest of your life, that's extremely hard.
Yeah, almost impossible.
Right. There's actually a lot of research to show that. It is almost impossible, right? I think that's one of the reasons why whenever we look at addiction, one of the most successful programs is AA, right? Because it does so many things. And I know that you have some experience with AA. I know that some of your program may even draw from some of that experience because it helps teach people how to live. Can you talk to us just a little bit about like that process and how this helps support somebody as they're learning to live their new life?
Yeah, so AA has been successful in treating alcoholics and addicts since 1935. Initially, when they started AA, you know, it was coming off of the Oxford group. So it was very, you know, centric to some of the things the Bible teaches you, but it kind of breaks off to more of a, you know, not so religious tone. But the great thing about AA, and I tell people this all the time, is if you work the steps, it starts with, all you have to say is, you know, you admit that there's a problem. You know, we say this to people all the time. That's the first thing you want to do always.
Right.
You move into finding something to support you in that. They call it a higher power. You can call it God. You can call it whoever it is, you know, creator. Some people do nature, just something bigger than yourself. And as you move through the steps, you start to do these actions that kind of I talked about earlier. Mm-hmm. You have to clean up the wreckage of your past. And making amends does not mean apologizing. It means making it right. And once you start to clean up that wreckage and all that weight is lifted, you move closer to self-improvement. They call it two-way prayer. So meditation is listening. And praying is asking, talking, right. Two-way prayer. And, you know, as you kind of move through the steps, at the end is always help others. And you do it again. You take someone else through it. And that's almost the most, arguably probably the most effective part on your recovery is helping another guy do it.
Right. I think that's so important. So when we talk about the steps, there's 12 steps. And as you go through them, they are designed in such a way to help change your heart and turn your heart into kind of a different place where addiction can be so self-serving and to actually a heart of serving others. And there's this entire exploration. I think that people hear that like, oh gosh, like I got to make amends to all the things I've done. And like, this is a process, right? This isn't something that you're going to plow through in a month or anything like that. And I think one of the most unique things about, in a step type program like you're talking about is what you just said there at the end is after you get done, you start to get the opportunity to start to help other people through this. And that's something that's so unique is that the sponsor program of AA or different types of, or Narcotics Anonymous or any types of those types of step groups is that you get the opportunity to have someone that's been through this help you through it. And they're available, a lot of the time. And
always.
And that is something that's so important, kind of even what we're talking about, right? Is you get to talk to somebody that's started to go on this journey themselves and start to figure it out so that you yourself can start to figure it out. And even as I'm kind of thinking about that, even sometimes that structure isn't enough, right?
Yeah.
Because people might not go to the groups like they're supposed to, or people, they might not put everything that they have into it like they're supposed to. So they might actually not be able to learn some of the things that they're actually needing to learn. And that's kind of where it feels like a program like yours really kind of comes into play. And you said that you spent a lot of time thinking about recovery, and I would love to hear some of your thoughts and how, right, you're going about implementing them in a different way, right? You're not a treatment center, right? You're a recovery center. Can you talk to us a little bit about that?
Yeah. So Learn to Live, recovery was kind of like a dream of mine. Almost as long as I've been sober, because, like a lot of people who go through their recovery journey, the people that have helped them the most or the programs that have helped them the most, they become very passionate about it. Mm-hmm. And mine was, it's called extended care. I went through a similar program on the East Coast. And when I moved back to St. Louis, I figured out that this level of care was just not here. And I had seen so many guys get sober and stay sober that I could see that it worked and there was a need. And I wasn't sure how I was going to do it, but that was just kind of one of my long-term goals. And I always kind of thought about it and talked, I talked to you about it before.
Right.
This process of recovery, I think, happens in this level of care. It can happen in regular sober living. I can't tell you that it won't. I think that it will, but I think that for the vast majority, especially people who get sober young, structure and, exploration is important, especially in early recovery.
Mm-hmm.
Recovery is different than sobriety. Sobriety is a physical thing. For the most part, it's a mental thing as well. Obviously you're in there and you want to use really bad, and they detox you and they get you off the drugs and they teach you some substance, like some relapse prevention skills and stuff like that in there. But you're in there a month, and we talked about earlier, you come out, you go right back to where you were.
Month
it just doesn't
enough.
Work.
Yeah.
It's not enough. And 28 days is what our insurance companies like to give us for treatment for the most part. And
right.
It's just not enough. So that's why you create a company like Learn to Live and you create a program that provides structure. So the guys that come to me, we have programming inside the house, and all of us, between me and my two other partners, do groups each week. Each of us do two groups a week with the guys. Mine is more recovery philosophy and kind of, you know, motivation to change type stuff. My partner David is very proficient in the steps, and he focuses on 12-step groups and helping guys understand kind of the process. And then Taylor Stewart is my program coordinator. She focuses on life skills and occupational mentorship is what we call it.
Right.
And I think that the pillars of those three things, along with you're going to get up at 9, we're going to go work out at 10. We're going to do yoga after lunch. You know, we have a group at this time. It will not be as structured as your addiction center experience was, but you still have a taste of that structure in that program where you thrived. And as you move through the program, it falls off.
Right. Like it's a slowly less structured, kind of like teaching somebody how to swim, right? Exactly. You start in the shallow end and like, all right, we'll teach you how to do stuff in there. Then, all right, we'll start taking off the water wings and teach you how to float and, you know, all these things. Then one day, all right, swim out to the deep end. Let's see how things go.
Yeah. And I, you know, we use the pillars of learn, live, and recover. So learn is that first milestone of recovery, as we call it. They come in, they learn about what we're trying to teach them. And we don't want them to have a job. We don't want them to have a car. We just want them to focus on themselves just for a little while. And we track that by meeting with them individually. Are they going to show up to groups? You know, are they going to try to buy into what we're doing? And then as you move through it, you know, live is the middle milestone. You can have a job. You're going to have more freedom to come and go. Obviously with, you know, the help of us being able to drug test and breathalyze and things like that, keeping you accountable, but you can go out. And then, you know, once you kind of get through that and we see that kind of you've learned some of these things for yourselves, the recover milestone is our mastery milestone. Mm-hmm. We want you to put these things into action. So, you know, you have shown up, you've worked on yourself, you found joy in your life or a passion or purpose, hopefully all of them. And we help you find that through occupational mentorship, where we have people donate their time from different fields to our guys and help them get a leg up in that field. It could be art, it could be education, it could be carpentry. And that way we can set them up for success.
Right. There's a lot of community aspect in this, like people having to come along and help.
Yeah.
I think that's such a big thing. That's the first time I've ever heard of something like that. Other people may have heard about like occupational mentorship, helping somebody learn some of the things that they may need in a certain occupation, or it sounds like even just discover if that's a good occupation for them or not.
Exactly.
I think that there is something important about this process too, is that you're slowly introducing more stressors over time. All right. Now, right now you don't work.
Yep.
Right. You just learn. Okay, now you can go out and let's see how you do with that and see, you know, if you get into these risky situations, how are things going to go, right? There's still going to be, you know, us that you can fall back on, but let's see how things go. And then, okay, hey, things are going really well. Let's kind of extend this even further and let's see like how far you can actually go with this. We were talking a little bit about this before we started recording about the age range. You take young adults, young men.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Can you talk to me a little bit about, it seems like you're talking about this passion that you have and the passion that you have for this particular group.
Yeah. So like making any huge life change, it's a lot more difficult when you're young. And I got sober at 20. you know, 10 years ago. And so I was in a sober house on my 21st birthday. A lot of people would be like, you know, I want to go to a Mexican restaurant and do shots of tequila and do all these things. And I was in a sober house. And did I want to drink? Absolutely, I did. But I chose not to because, you know, a few days before that, I talked to my sponsor and I was like, man, my 21st birthday is coming up. You know, I think it's going to be a big stressor for me. And he said, look at your life today. How is it different from your life 6 months ago? And I was like, man, it's a lot different. It's a lot better. And he was like, why would you trade that for drinks on your 21st birthday? And I was like, okay, well, you know, that's simple enough. So I didn't do it. But my passion starts there because I think for this age group of 18 to 26 or 18 to 30 young men, unestablished professionals, they haven't found their purpose yet. A lot of them have had difficulty with school or difficulty in their first job or have just graduated high school and aren't sure where their direction is in life.
Right.
And they find substance use and abuse, and it's a crutch for them and it becomes a problem. But when they come to me, it's, you know, it's our job and their job together to rebuild them. And it's a process and it's hard and it involves action. And I think that for this age group, 18 to 26 is the vast majority of, you know, the percentages of people that are dying right now. These young adults, we're losing them at a rapid pace because of fentanyl and because of the virus. You know, people are inside and isolating, and that's not good for guys like us. So, you know, it's a combination. It's easier
to conceal use, right?
Exactly. And when you can't have in-person meetings or you can't have this type of structure in your life, which we have seen since 1935, as I talked about earlier, help people stay sober because of that structure, it's so hard to stay sober.
Right. So there's a couple different things I want to pick your brain about. And I have my own ideas, but I'm curious about your ideas. Tell me about some of the really important skills that you feel like just someone that is in the recovery process, that it's something that they kind of learn or that they realize and they're just like, oh, wow, this is a game changer.
Okay. Yeah. So I talk about this all the time. It's one of the, you know, kind of the values of our program, intention. And intention, you know, is what I believe building on, you know, a goal. You're doing something with purpose. I'm getting up at 9 a.m. because I don't want to be late for work purpose. I am working out 3 times a week because it's good for me and I feel better. You're doing that for purpose, not from someone waking you up in the morning, like in a treatment center, like you got to get up at 5:30. Here you go. You're doing it for you and you're doing it for a reason. And I think that that's huge, especially for, you know, AA and 12-step programs, because you have to be at least start to be self-motivated to show up to meetings and do the work. So I would say the first one would be doing things with intention, building on not just the goals that you have, but putting action to them.
Right. I love that. And I think that even the people that are maybe not in recovery, that's an important skill to learn, right? Having intention in things that you're doing. And if you don't know the why behind what you're doing, it makes it really easy to ignore or to stop doing something, right? If I don't intentionally go and exercise because I know that it's going to help me feel better, and I start to forget that, and I'm like, oh, I'm just doing it just because, it's a lot easier for me to stop doing that. Or if I'm like, hey, man, I know I want to have pizza tonight, and I know that every time that I have pizza, it does something to me, and like I'm really sluggish and lazy the next time that I do it. all right, so I'm going to intentionally have something else so I don't have that. So many things get tied into intention. So I think that's a wonderful skill to learn. What's maybe another skill that's kind of a light bulb moment for some people?
You know, and I kind of talked about this earlier, but I believe in the power of positivity.
Right.
I think that you come into this, your life's not going so great. A lot of times people are very kind of resentful of their situation. Mm-hmm. It's very hard to look at the positive parts of life. But once you see kind of those dominoes fall, like for me, it was like, okay, my parents are starting to trust me. They're taking my calls and they're not as skeptical of me. That's a very positive thing.
Yeah.
And as the dominoes start to fall, you see more and more positivity in your life. It becomes a powerful motivator.
Right. Oh, I think that something that's so key about that is, it's funny that you're talking about this. I literally just last episode that I had of this podcast was adjusting your mindset. And this is actually something that I talked about because I used to have a very pessimistic mindset too.
Mm-hmm.
And definitely not that way anymore. I'm more of a silver lining type of person. Yeah. But I think that so much goes into helping us learn how to change how we experience the world around us and what it is that we pick out. I remember very distinctly the yellow car experiment when I was going through my psychology classes, where they would have, college students count how many yellow cars and keep track of them every day. And you know what? By Friday, there was always a lot more cars that they noticed than on Monday, right? Because they're focusing on it and they're paying attention. It feels like the intention and the helping to kind of like change your mood, your mindset, those two are kind of married together.
Yeah.
So this is a part that we haven't talked about very much. I want to make sure, because I think this is one of the awesome things about what you're doing. What can people hope to expect from recovery, right? What is it that they can see and they could just be like, wow, this was worth everything. This is why I'm doing all of this.
Yeah, I think, you know, that is the crown jewel of this whole thing. And, you know, I would never get into this if I didn't think I could change people's lives, because someone definitely changed mine. You know, to give an example, you know, recovery can unlock so many great abilities and traits and things about yourself that you never thought you had. For example, high school, I was a horrible student. I had several tries at college when I was using, couldn't do it. And then I went back to school and somehow I figured it out. I made Dean's List 3 times in undergrad. I graduated SLU with honors with my master's, something I never thought I would do. And my dad will tell you that too. I'd be like, yeah, I never thought you'd graduate college. You know, I thought I'd be kind of picking you up from jail or something like that, you know? So
what does that say about who you thought you were during your addiction and who you think you are now that you're in recovery? That is so different.
I was so unhappy with myself. I felt like, you know, anything that I was doing, it never measured up. I wasn't happy with myself as a person. I didn't think I was succeeding in any way. And that's where a lot of my anxiety and my use came from, to numb those feelings.
Right.
And I had to master those feelings first before I could succeed. But once I did, the dominoes started to fall, and I am so thankful now that I went through this process.
Oh, that's what I was going to say. What does it feel like living in recovery and like knowing kind of the things you need to do?
Yeah, it feels incredible. A lot of people ask me, you know, do you miss it? Are there certain things that you miss? And no, I have a life beyond my wildest dreams. I have so many great things that I could talk for hours about and tell you about. But, you know, I don't wake up anxious for those reasons anymore. I don't not like myself. I don't like blame my situation. I wouldn't trade my situation for the world. And I owe all of that to my recovery.
Right. How empowering is that, that it feels like that you can change something in your life and you've seen it happen. You've experienced it happen. All right. Like I've done something to change how it is. And you can look over this past 10 years compared to the, you know, 10 years before, what was that like? And that is such a cool feeling to be able to do that. Right. You said it's like, it's incredible. And I think that that's something that's so important is, right, we talked about how we kind of get bogged down in the addiction part, but there is this life on the other side. And, you know, man, I've had the opportunity to meet and talk with you and stuff before this. We had the opportunity to work together for a little bit. And there is something about, if anyone's ever been to an AA meeting or an NA meeting, you can tell the people that've got it figured out, right? Yeah. They have they have a certain light about them. Is kind of how I describe it. There's a glow there. And it's something that is so appealing to so many for good reason, right? Because once you're in that recovery, it feels like you know what you're doing finally, right? You can have confidence that things are going to be okay in your life and you're going to be okay. And of course, because you got through something that was really terrible and really hard. All right. So I actually want to keep on this path about some of the good things that happen. And I actually want to share some of my experiences, some good things that have happened, right? I've seen people that have gone through recovery and gone to achieve something that like was their dream. I've had experience where clients I've worked with, they've gone into, I think even right now he's in like some type of special forces in the military, which is, that was always his dream. And there's no way he would have accomplished that with his substance use. And I know that there are people that I know of that are figuring this out. And even like to what you're saying at a young age, and you see this new life in them and this new kind of control that happens. And you kind of ask them the same thing, like, hey, would you go back? And they're always like, no. Like not a chance, right? And like you said, like the anxiety that lived there, the feeling of like the world is happening to you instead of you being able to happen to the world is just so different. And it's kind of crushing on that other side. It's like, well, why would I want to go back to that?
Yeah, I think I've seen so many things for people, you know, positive things that come out of this. I think that, you know, I've gotten sober with people who were in some legal trouble, quite a bit of legal trouble. Let's say, you know, several felonies. They go to treatment, they do sober living. Somehow those things are kind of taking care of themselves because they're doing, you know, kind of what they can,
doing what they're supposed to. Yeah.
And now these guys have their own business, you know, and he has a family and he, you know, has accomplished things that he never thought he would. He was homeless.
Right.
He was homeless. He was locked up. And now he's the complete opposite of that. You know, I have seen people like myself who struggled with school, go back to school and thrive. You know, I've seen, you know, there was even this one guy who was like a really good athlete. And he, you know, had goals, but he was just kind of joke around with him. Like he wanted to play in the NFL and he wanted to play D1 in college. And, you know, he could have never done that while he was using.
Right.
But he did that. He played in the NFL, you know, 1% of the world, less than that, can play professional sports. and he did that.
Well, I think some of the cool things, even just around this, is, and I'm hearing you talk about it, right? And the smile comes to your face. Like, whenever we see people achieve some of these things, and I think it even happens later on in life too, right? You can have somebody, right? I've seen people that have successful careers, like really, really successful careers, and they're just not happy, right? They're the ones that go home and they have several scotches, or they have some whiskey, or the beers or whatever. And, you know, they're an absent spouse, or they're just really unhappy with their life. And you look at it from the outside and you're like, wow, you got this nice house, nice paycheck, right? Awesome cars. You got all this stuff. And it doesn't amount to anything, because internally they're still struggling, and they're not in a place where they're addressing that part. And I think it's so important, because there is freedom on the other side. And people do this all the time, even because we've been talking about like recovery, you know, for young adult men, like even people that are later on in their life where they already have career paths that they are on, and they have this trajectory, finding recovery and then relearning, rediscovering even sometimes how to live their life, or even learning for the first time. Right.
Yeah.
Being 50, 60, 70, and starting to make some of these discoveries that, oh my gosh, this is like, I can't tell you, cause I work primarily with couples. I can't tell you how many couples I work with that are actually in recovery, and they'll talk with me about it. They'll say like, hey, you know, like, yeah, I was pretty absent. Then whenever my kid had a grandchild, they said, hey, you cannot be around this grandchild because of, you know, what you do when you're, you know, using. And they turn their life around, right? They become something else. And you talk to them, they're like, yeah, I'm not going to go back, right? It's not worth it. And like, I'm happy now, right? I'm able to control my life now in a way, or at least feel like I have this control and this direction in my life that they didn't really know that they had before. And like I'm saying, like on the outside, you look at it and you're like, wow, they got it figured out, right? I want to be like them. Then you talk to them, they'd say, no, actually you don't want to be like me.
Yeah. I think that's an important distinction, because a lot of us will get caught up in material things. Mm-hmm. Like, we see people that have a nicer car, they have the nice house, they have, you know, this and that we would be like, oh man, they got it figured out. But there's such an internal piece to recovery. Doesn't matter what age you are, that, you know, that process is important. If you truly want to be happy, if you truly want to reap the rewards that recovery can give you, you know, and I think in the simplest form, what it teaches you is, you look inward and you say, you know, you become less of a selfish person and more of a selfless person.
Right.
What can I do for the next guy? What can I do for this other person? You know, 12-step program doesn't tell you, just when you're working with other alcoholics, that you should be doing what you can for them, but anyone.
Right.
And I think that, you know, going through that, whether you do it in a 12-step program or program like Celebrate Recovery, or you do it with your therapist, it's self-discovery. You learn, and then you look inward and you work on yourself.
Right.
Without that, it's difficult.
Man, you hit something with this material thing with me. It's something that I've personally been going through recently. I do remember the story where this guy's going through recovery, and he's talking to me about it. He goes, you know, sometimes whenever I go to my AA group or I'm at church or something like that, he goes, and I'm thinking, man, I got some cash in my pocket, and right now I'm not feeling, you know, I'm not feeling like I have the fortitude that I need. And it's like, dang, like, all right, put it all in there. He goes, cause then I don't have the resources that I need to be able to do that. And talk about like such a shift of your heart being able to do something like that. being able to look at like money or resources you have and not think of them in a way of like, how is this going to benefit me? Instead of looking at it like, how is this going to get me in trouble? Right. Yeah. How can I, you know, I may not be able to manage this properly. Just totally different. Right. And I think that it is easy for us to get into a mindset. And I don't know how much this is with addiction or just like, you know, Western society here or anything like that. The desire to have so many material goods that, you know, we get trapped in our jobs, trapped in chasing a dollar. And then we have to somehow manage all these material possessions. And it becomes such a drag. And that's one of the things that I love about so your program is one that people will go there and they'll stay there. And one of the things I love about that is they don't have to manage all their stuff that they might have accumulated over time, right? They don't have to manage their car, right? They don't have to manage like their job or like, I gotta make sure that all my space at home is clean. Like they just got to worry about what they're doing there. I got to worry about making my meals here. I got to worry about doing my laundry here. That's it, right? I don't have to worry about managing all that other stuff.
Yeah. The idea is to think least as you can. So we talked about kind of the different levels of it, how you get more responsibility added to you, but you know, it involves a kind of a leap of faith as well, because, you know, after you do a program for like a month or say, you know, you just kind of white knuckled it yourself to get clean enough to come to our program, you have to leave the comfortable, you know, of the places, you know, and your job and come to us and start anew. Mm-hmm. But the material things you don't have to worry about, because they're taken care of for you.
Right. Well, I think that's something that's comforting about it. Like, as I said, I think that we kind of learn to look for that. And I think that's one of the, you know, that's one of the mindset changes, right? About doing stuff intentionally. And that's something I think is part of a lot of recovery programs, I think is really important. Right. It becomes just another thing that we can become a slave to. Right. Not only can, and you know, how many people may not have a substance abuse challenge, but they're also, you know, instead of that, they're a slave to making money so that I can make payments on all these cars and this big house that I have and, you know, all these different things. And you and I laugh about it because it's true. Yeah. And it's even that, right, is a different way of thinking about like how we live our lives. I'm wondering, even just kind of like while we're talking about this area, do these guys learn anything about like how to handle their money as they're going through this program?
Absolutely. You know, we like through the skills building part of our program, we want them to learn, you know, as simple things as like our menu, which each week they decide what they want to eat. They make a grocery list and they have to stick to a budget. You know, that budget that they set. And, you know, we help them budget by starting with their groceries. And then, you know, as they move through our program, they have access to more money because obviously they're allowed to get a job. Mm-hmm. And each week I talk with them by not just, I have two different ways to track the goals that they have. One is recovery goals and the other one is action. Action involves more occupational goals and things like that, self-improvement more than anything else. And we talk about it. Okay, so what's a long-term goal for your money? Okay, you want to buy a house. Well, let's talk about what a mortgage looks like. And occupational mentorship, I talked about earlier. I actually have a realtor friend. And, you know, one of the things she does is she helps people, you know, work on their credit and talk about different mortgages and different lenders and ways right. that would work out well for them. And that helps people out a lot when they leave, because you start to you know, you want to buy a house or you want to help fix your credit.
You got to know, you know what steps you need to take.
Exactly.
Right. So people kind of learn some of them, these practical skills as well while they're there.
Yep.
Right. Now, I kind of wonder, Matt, I know that we covered a lot of different topics and things. I wonder if there's something that maybe we haven't talked about or touched upon that you feel like is maybe important for maybe people that are listening to this know, whether or not there are people that are in a recovery or there are people that maybe desire it, or even there are people that are like, hey, I have people in my life that that are addicts, and I kind of want to know if things can be different.
Yeah, I think, you know, if I were to give, you know, a message to those people, I would tell them that things can be different and people can recover, you know, if given a chance. And sometimes they need more than one chance. You know, and, you know, if there was one other thing that I didn't mention about Learn to Live, it's the mindfulness aspect of it. Mindfulness is kind of big in the mental health field right now. A lot of people are using it. And, you know, recently in the past year, I have started to use meditation and use kind of this mindfulness practice in my own life just to beta test it to see. And I can tell you that it has made a world of difference for me. And it would be something that I would recommend that everyone do, regardless of if they're in recovery or not. And I mention that because addiction is a family disease. A lot of the people I will work with will be parents, friends, families. And those are the people who are going to hear this and wonder, does my son, does my spouse, does my niece need something like this? And, you know, mindfulness can work for them too. You have to be patient. It's hard.
It is
hard, right, to be patient, you know, with the person. But there is light at the end of the tunnel. I wouldn't be here if there wasn't, you know.
Right. I think that's so true. I love that you said that sometimes a person needs more than one chance. I think so often we kind of get to the place where we're like, okay, I cannot give them any more chances. And like, that makes sense, right? There's a lot of hurt that gets wrapped up in the things that happen. And sometimes that's why, like, having, you know, addiction professionals and having a plan set in place is what's needed to make these changes, right? We're talking about huge, drastic changes. And sometimes that extra chance is needed so that they can actually take on this, you know, take this course with what it is that they actually need. I can't tell you like how many times where people have been through like what would be like a traditional, you know, substance abuse process where, you know, they go into an outpatient, then they get referred to a residential, or they go straight to residential. They do their stay in there, and then they come back out to the intensive outpatient, and then they get done with the intensive outpatient, then they go back to using drugs. The thing is that like this is a huge process, and you talk about developing new habits. I think the word of wisdom that most people are familiar with is that it takes 21 days to form a new habit. That is actually completely false. And the research, the research around it, that number 21 got picked out of it, but it talks about sometimes it takes people up to a year to develop a new habit.
Yep.
21 days was actually the minimum number that it recommended for, and that was for simple habits, right? We're talking about changing, you know, hundreds upon thousands of different habits of someone. And like for us, sometimes it's good to put that into view, right? For us to understand that what we're asking people to do, you know, they may not see this light at the end of the tunnel that we're talking about right now, right? They could be listening to Matt here and listening to me right here. And they're like, hey, this sounds really great on paper, but they don't actually see it happening in this way, right? They don't actually know that that's actually true. Well, Matt, I feel like a lot of this has been really helpful, and I hope that it's been helpful to our listeners too. I know you have a ton of experience in this area, having lived through it yourself. And it's just been really nice that you can come on and even just kind of talk to us about this. I wonder if someone's listening to this and they want to get a hold of you, whether or not they have questions or they want to know more about your program or anything, what's the best way that they may be able to get contact with you?
So the best way is, you know, you can check out our website. It's learntoliverecovery.com, spelled all the way out. Or we also have learntoliverecoverymo.com. If you want some more information, there's a form on there. You can ask us for more information. And, you know, someone will get back to you, you know, within minutes and kind of help you out with that. You can also email me at admin at learntoliverecovery.com, because that's where that form goes to anyway, is that email. So if anyone has any questions, and honestly, you know, utilize us as a resource for referring someone as well, you know, because if they're not right for us, you know, it would be irresponsible if we took them. And we will help you find, you know, the correct level of care, whether that's residential or, you know, outpatient, or outpatient with a combination of sober living. Right. You know, we're happy to help facilitate that as well.
I think even something we talked about before we started recording, right? That's that you've even done that with several people that have called in, and finding the right placement for them and everything, which is really important, right? To meet somebody where they're at.
Exactly.
All right. So I appreciate your time, and thank you all for listening to this episode. We hope that you guys found it helpful. Hey, if this is something that you've enjoyed, I would encourage you guys to go check out learntoliverecovery.com, and you guys can look on there. I know that Matt's also pretty active on social media through his page and everything as well. You know, any types of news or updates, that'd be a good place to go. If you found this episode helpful, I would also have another ask for you, that whatever app that you're listening to this to, or if you're listening on a podcast platform, if you'd be able to go ahead and give us a 5-star rating so that other people might be able to find us. And again, appreciate you taking the time to listen to this. And, you know, it's a tough time out there right now. This is being recorded still in the midst of the pandemic, and life is really stressful. And so if you are in a position to do this, we'd ask not only to take care of yourself, but also just check in on somebody else and make sure that they're doing okay too, right? We're all together in this. So until next time, I wish you well. Thank you for listening to our show. This podcast is designed to provide accurate and reliable information, and those that appear on the show are all licensed professionals in the area of mental health counseling. We are in no way rendering legal or medical advice, only information to help serve you better in making decisions in your life. If you need a professional, you should find one. Music you are listening to is called Lobby Time, and that is by Kevin MacLeod and licensed through Creative Commons.